Hey, everybody. Charlie here from Eat Sleep Elite. Just want to give a quick update before the show here. So for the first like 25 or so minutes, I had to actually use my phone to record the podcast on my end. Duke's audio sounds perfect, but I just want to let you know for the first 25 or so minutes, if it sounds a little shitty, that does even itself out. There's been some internet issues and this, that, and the other. So it all sorts itself out and it should be all very, very good. So yeah, this is another enjoyable show of a great week of wrestling. And yeah, I just wanted to give that brief little thing. If you're like, what the fuck's happening with that audio? It fixes itself. So I do end up switching to my microphone like I'm talking here. So that being said, let's roll the intro and I hope you enjoy this show.
Ladies, gentlemen, and bees, this is the ESE Podcast, your weekly AEW review and breakdown. We are back at it again with the boys, da boys. And, you know, listen, I don't even know how to describe it. It's just, it might sound a little bit off. So if you're like, what the fuck is that? It's Charlie's internet literally took a shit as we started. Like,
yeah, best way to put it. I'm basically calling in.
Yeah, this is a phone interview with the Lisan Al Gaib from the future. You know, so in 2,000 years, what's the world like out there? Our great one, you know.
The world is wonderful.
That's what we like to hear. All right. So yeah. So if there's a little bit less of Charlie this week, that's the only reason why. Just because like I don't. It sounds fine, but like it's been robot-y at points and like blah blah blah. So you know, it is what it is. But if we lose a little bit of what Charlie's saying, it'll be a fun game to try and invent what we thought he was saying before he comes back in from the robotiness. So we'll play that game today. But make sure you're keeping score at home. But anyway, that being said, it was a pretty good week of wrestling this week. I thought I actually hadn't. I've been so fucking sick. I literally didn't watch wrestling until last night. So. And we're recording this as of Monday of this week, so or of the week after the show happened, I should say the wrestling shows we're going to be discussing. And it's a huge fucking week. I mean, we've got Grand Slam and we've got fucking New Japan this week, right? So you know, I mean, it's going to be a pretty fucking massive week, I would say, Charlie. Right? So I mean, it's going to be probably the biggest week until Revolution, right? You would say?
Yeah. And our New Japan show will probably be coming out about 12 hours from give or take. When the hell people are listening to this. So that should be fun.
Yeah, 100%. Sorry about that. I just got a text from my dad as we started. So anyway, I may have to pause in the middle and just like throw it to you and hope that your mic just holds it out for a minute because they want me to take the dogs out. But we'll see if we can make it through the show first. Either way, that being said, there was obviously a lot of really good stuff to talk about this week. There were some really great matches. There was some actually, I think, really great promo segments this week as well, which has been something I will actually highlight. The beginning of AEW's 2025 is very, I don't know if it's been like a shift back toward like a couple of years ago when this was something that was more common, but it does seem like we're getting more promo heavy at this point. You know what I mean? Like, in a way that I don't know that I expected, because it's not that I don't think people can cut them. I just think AEW's always much, much more been about the in-ring content. That is something you can definitively say about AEW. Wrestling has always mattered here. You know what I mean? And so not every feud has to have, like, the sauce, if you will, in terms of, and maybe some people will disagree with that, but I feel like enough stories have, like, either enough history or whatever it is, you know what I'm saying? That a lot of times we don't necessarily need a super strong story to tie these things together. And maybe that's a criticism you could also level at AEW, but I also think it can be looked at as a positive in some ways. You know what I mean? But I mean, you know, it's a big week though. So I guess with that being said, Charlie, I guess we hop into favorites this week. And, I had the nod this week since you had it last week. And, kind of actually nice kind of fitting for me to get it on the week that I come back after missing last week, which I apologize to everybody about. But like I said at the top, I've just been super sick. I'm still not fully over this shit yet. I'm going back to work tonight, but I don't imagine I'm going to have a fun time because I still don't feel 100%. Super dehydrated still, but anyway.
Rehydrate!
Yeah, I'm literally, quite literally. I need to be hydrated by the gods. But anyway, so that being said, I guess top into favorites, Charlie. And yeah, so I really, really, really enjoyed a lot of stuff this week. But for me, there was two matches I think I pretty much had circled on my sheet. And one of them is one of the matches that ended up in our favorites this week. This match, I didn't even really, I mean, I know these two have had good matches this year. Well, I guess last year, right? Or it's the A-Lag last year, whatever. It was good in the classic is what I'm saying. The C2. But I you just never know. I mean, sometimes you can just have a really good match. You know what I mean? Especially in a tournament setting. You just don't know. So clearly these two wanted to set something up for the future. Like, this is a guy that Kyle feels like he needs to redeem himself against a little bit, even though in a lot of people's eyes, Mark Briscoe, if you compared their two positions on the card, I mean, no offense to Mark Briscoe, but, you know, Kyle Fletcher's in a much more favorable position to a lot of people, I would imagine. You know what I mean? So it's interesting. It's an interesting little grudge to have, you know? So let's get into it a little bit. So, I mentioned that him wanting to avenge the loss felt like really appropriate to me because it's one of the few blemishes in his entire tournament run, other than losing, obviously, but whatever, you know? And he gets busted open on the ring post. Mark Briscoe does, that is. You know, they had this really, really great sequence of near, like, death trades is what I called it. Like, while they were trading on the apron next to the table that they'd set up. And I'm almost never a fan of that. Almost never, because I feel like it's just, like, obvious. You know what I mean? Like, but in this case, I don't know, it just kind of worked for me in a way that I wasn't really expecting. I think there was a lot of that for me this week. And maybe it was because I was not feeling the greatest all week. And, like, I just was, like, expecting everything to just feel like I felt internally. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know why. When you're sick, it just feels like that, you know, like the whole world is just pain, you know, but I don't know. I really enjoyed that aspect of it in a way that I normally don't. So I have to, you know, it's something I try to do on this show, Charlie, is when I like something that I generally don't, I try to highlight that because like it's, I feel like that's significant. You know what I mean? Like if you can make something like me, like something I don't really like that much or that I've never really liked, I feel like you're doing something pretty good. Right. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, and on paper, Kyle Fletcher and Mark Briscoe, it's kind of an odd matchup. But when they get into the ring together, they have unbelievably great chemistry. And now we're 2-for-2 in these singles matches. This was an incredible match. And Kyle Fletcher, yet, by the way, what a great week for our new pillars. 3 of the 4, at least. What an incredible week for them. We're off to a great start with our
and our honorary pillar as well, making it in there as well, you know, like.
Absolutely. And, you know, while this match didn't have the drama of the C2 match, what it carried with it was the hate that Kyle Fletcher really infuses into his wrestling now, like you had mentioned, from the loss. So that still bugs him, and that should bug him in this company. That is a big deal. And yeah,
I feel like we're going to come down to this thing with Kyle Fletcher, dude. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I feel like we're going to come down to this thing with Kyle Fletcher, right? Where, like, it's, we're looking at it now and it's absurd what he's doing, right? Because he's acting like a big time mega heel in Japan, not like a Japanese, like, average fucking gaijin. He's acting like what if Kenny turned evil in Japan, what he would be like, basically. You know what I mean? Like, or Kanosuke or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, he's hitting moves harder than everybody else. He is, like, he's sequencing out his matches in a way that makes him feel like he's literally got a cheat code or something. I mean, you could crack this all the way back to the C2. You know what I mean? Like, and maybe even before. Like, it is insane what they've been able to establish just in the last several months with Kyle Fletcher. And we're going to look back on it in several years and be like, holy fucking shit. Look at how good Kyle is now. But look at how it started. He was every bit as good as he is now 5 years ago or 2 years ago. But we just couldn't really – it was hard to put that into words because we were seeing stuff that – I mean, it's so hard to tell. Like, it'd be like me trying to tell you why the best javelin thrower in the world is throwing javelins really well, like at the Olympics. I don't have a concept for what it is that he's doing that is so different because it's so new, you know, it's so ahead of my knowledge that I can't even put words to it. So
here's things too, is we've done our due diligence along the way of trying to point this out to people that maybe haven't seen it, is when Kyle was going out there in the past year or two, and he was wrestling singles matches against people that can be even in the breadth of the greatest of all time, like a Danielson, like an Ospreay, like an Omega. It didn't matter who. He was
going to Kanosuke, fucking everybody. I mean, dude, this is why they gave him matches with everybody last year. They wanted to show us what he could do so that we could put him in this position at the start of this year, and it was a brilliant move in my opinion.
And yet, beyond all of that, son of a bitch, his one-on-one matches with Mark Briscoe might be his golden chemistry. So,
genuinely, I loved all those matches. And I will say, they obviously, those matches with Mark don't touch the match with Will or anything like that, or with Kenosuke or anything, right? But the thing is, like, here's the thing, right? Like, he at the same time manages to put those matches almost on that kind of level with the, like, what he's done with it. I don't even know how to describe it. Like, I thought I had the right words there. I kind of lost the sentence a bit through, you know what I mean? Because I was like, how do I even describe this? It's so hard to describe. Kyle is operating on a completely different level right now, and I think it's going to take us a long-ass time to really catch up with that. You know what I mean? Maybe that's just my stupid brain, but, you know. But yeah, so things to, you know, sorry, did you have something?
Because there's been a lot of hyperbole about this week. A lot of people have been calling this one of the greatest weeks that AEW's had in a long time. And that's been the talk of the town, whether it was Blue Sky, whether it was in the media, people talking about it. A lot of people have been kind of mentioning, and it's been hyperbolic takes like that. So going into it, because both of us, we're a little behind on Collision, but we had heard how great Collision was. And when you get to this match, and you have the energetic crowd that you do, and you have the wrestlers going this hard, just what a great week for AEW.
It was 100%.
Really, because we mentioned last week, look, it was kind of a midweek. It wasn't bad. It wasn't offensive. It was just kind of mid. But a lot of people, the sky is falling when AEW is a midweek, and that's something we've talked about for 4 years on our show now. So, but yeah, this was just such an incredible week, and let's keep the ball rolling here, where we're staying on Collision. And I got to tell you, one of my favorite matchups, I never really expected, but holy shit, did they embrace the gimmick. And that was Brian Keith versus Bandido. Shout out Bandido's return, one of our brand new pillars. And Duke, I am so proud to call him one of our pillars after this is what he did in his return. Oh my God, was he fucking awesome. There was a sequence here that I believe Nigel called it a spaghetti western sequence, where they kind of mash up in the ring against each other, and their backs are turned, and they turn around, face each other, walk to the edges of the ring, power up, the crowd is fucking losing it, they charge full sprint at each other, knock each other out, and everyone just starts roaring. It was truly a fucking moment. And yeah, just such an enjoyable match. Bandido looked like a million bucks. The bounty hunter Brian Key hunting the most wanted. It's one of the easiest stories ever. And it worked, it delivered, it sang. I loved every single moment of this. And there was a lot of Lucha Libre on Collision. And this was one of those special Collision episodes that I think just as a whole was so great. So yeah, what'd you think of that moment? What'd you think of this match? And the Bad Apple Brian Keith, he's kicking ass too.
100%. I mean, I think that's the biggest takeaway I have from this is, like, you know, I've been kind of like down on Brian Keith for a while now, just because he's kind of just been henching in the background for the learning tree for a while now, you know, and that's fine. It's a good way for him to get on TV and, you know, get opportunities. And obviously it results in this, right? So that being said, I've really enjoyed this match. And just you bringing back up that moment, I mean, there's just things that, like, you know, AEW is willing to do. It's funny, if they did that in the WWE, they would do it wrong. It would not be, the crowd, maybe nowadays it would go better, but, like, back in the day, they would do it, the crowd would reject it, and then fucking Roman Reigns would come out, because I think that'd be the thing that would save it, right? You know what I mean? So, like, you know, like, it's like, So the fact that this can land in the way that it does in AEW and not just feel like, and I'm sure some people were calling it PWG bullshit, I'm sure, you know what I mean? But, like,
good, they, you know, embrace that. You're allowed.
No, 100%. That's a lot of the people that built AEW. That's what they fucking, a lot of people know them for. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like, we should embrace it 100% more. I wish we could somehow get some involvement from, I mean, obviously we get AEW people at, if they were still to do, be, you know, Bola, but if there were to be another Bola, I would want there to be somehow AEW involved, because we have, like, the main people involved in a lot of the aspects of AEW shows, you know what I mean? So, anyway, you know.
Them for earning that moment, because the crowd lost their fucking minds.
Oh, yeah, dude. This was really fun. I have a lot of higher hopes for Bandido for this year now, more than I did. Because I just wasn't sure when he was coming back. Because AEW can do this thing right now where you're ready to come back, but they're just like, I don't know if it's the right time. We've got all this stuff going on. This is kind of the perfect time. A lot of things I think that they had planned for the start of this year are going well, but it's also, I think they had other plans that maybe, I don't know, I almost feel like you could kind of always tell when there was something that they wanted to do that there's clearly that we haven't seen on TV, right? Because it just got nixed or whatever, right? But you could tell there was some plan that is just not happening right now. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what it is. I can't tell you. I'd have to really think back what was going on right before the end of the year. You know what I mean? I just don't care to. But I can just feel it. I don't know why I'm getting this feeling that something didn't go quite the way they wanted it to. You know what I mean? Like, and so they had to pivot. And that's how we ended up where we're at. But I am 100% down for Bandito to be the beneficiary of that. I could just be completely talking out of my ass, by the way. That's just a feeling I get. So if there's a news story that comes up later that I don't know about that turns out to confirm this, I just know that I had no fucking clue. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just letting everybody know now. You know, like,
I mean, look,
I don't think that's the case.
There were those rumblings of trying to find some luchadors to fill the gap that are open now, so... Yeah.
So that could be it. It could just be the Lucha Bros being gone. That could be that simple. Yep. Or rather, Penta being gone. You know what I mean? And Phoenix obviously not being gone until the end of his contract or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, beyond that, though, I mean, obviously I really have a big fan of Brian Keith. And, yeah, I mean, did you have any more thoughts specifically you wanted to get to on this match, Charlie? I really thought
yeah,
it was just a really fun match, very PWG flavored, you know?
It was so much fun. I was just giggling the whole fucking time. And When that happens multiple times on an episode like it did this week's Collision, it was a pretty special show. But yeah, we do have a little bit of news today. I mean, I guess there are some massive news stories, but they're all pretty much contract related. So let's open up with this. There were some releases from WWE, and we'll throw out some names and see if any of them maybe could join AEW. We did this before. We only landed on Ricochet, and well, he's the only one that showed up, so... Okay, Electra Lopez, she was released, Cedric Alexander, Sonya Deville, the Authors of Pain, Paul Ellering, Blair Davenport. So funny, Blair Davenport could be the first person to go from AEW to WWE to AEW, worth noting. Karl Anderson and Luke Gallows and Isla Dawn? I'm not really sure. I've always pronounced it as Isla, but I've seen other people say Isla. So, Good Brothers getting released again. I don't even know what to say at this point again about them. I just don't care about them anymore. I feel like they've burned every bridge imaginable. I mean, when he signed on to WWE holding that New Japan's title still, like, bro, just to get fired again, that's brutal. But again,
I think we've talked about it. Like, Cedric's the one that jumps out to me because her yes. Syndicate association, obviously, you know. But I mean, here's the thing: I could see an argument for Paul Ellering doing something with his daughter, right, in Ring of Honor,
definitely.
But I don't know that they want to do that because I don't see why they couldn't have already. You know what I mean? Because I think there was a time when Paul wasn't back in the WWE, or was he still there? I don't know. Maybe he was backstage, and I just didn't know. But
contract.
Even so, they could have at least, like, acknowledged it. You know what I mean? It feels like they haven't even talked about that fact that she's an Ellering hardly at all. You know what I mean? Like, so, I'm not saying I want him to be her manager, but you could at least acknowledge that they both exist. Maybe have him be in the crowd or something, and somebody use that as an advantage in a feud. You know what I'm saying? Like, these are things you can do. But, yeah, I think Cedric. I mean, I do expect the Good Brothers to unfortunately end up back in AEW. It just feels like it's the only place that'll take them because that's where their boys are. You know what I mean? So, I mean, yeah, you know.
They got to feel a little like, come on, man. How did you leave again? Like, they were hitting the Adam Cole moment, but, you know, it wasn't good enough. So, went to go be AJ's boys. And look, it didn't even happen.
Yeah, I mean, you know. Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, it's... I'm kind of in the same spot with you with those two. Like, I really don't want to see them anymore. Like, I'm over it. They never did anything with them ever in any company they've ever been in, except for New Japan. And New Japan really didn't do much with them, if we're being honest. You know what I mean? So, like, other than elevate them when the rest of their group do the Japan thing. When the group was winning, they were elevated to a championship level. You know what I mean? That's what happened with those guys. You know what I mean? So, like, that's not to say that they didn't have the ability to get there themselves. Obviously, they did. But it's just like, you know.
Yeah.
You know what these guys feel like to be? And this is going to probably result in us, not that I would really care that much, to be honest, but, you know, ever getting an interview with them. But I just suspect that they are the kind of guys that phone it in a lot, you know? because they've made it, and so they don't feel like they need to anymore.
Fucking ribbed for a long time. So, but yeah, I'm with you. Alexander, he's the one that sticks out the most, but I'll tell you what, Isla Dawn, she's good. She's really good. So, I believe she was, even as of 2024, she was a champion. So,
yeah, I don't know. I don't know much about the NXT women or the women on like the lower tier of the WWE like rosters. I don't know much about them. I haven't really been paying attention to the Fed over the last year or two. So, but I'm sure if they're released, I'm not sure that they're, you know, I mean, sometimes they release good wrestlers, but I mean, also sometimes they release good wrestlers for good reason. You know what I mean? Sometimes they might be really good 99.9% of the time, but it's that 0.1% is where you need them to deliver and they just can't. You know what I mean? So, I mean, that's a real thing, you know?
Yeah.
I can't think of an example in AEW, but, you know, like there are some. I don't want to.
So, there was a re-signing. Kevin Owens, it sounds like he's re-signed with WWE for another 5 years. So, kind of pushed the Steen dream out the window. Again, Triple H has treated him very well. It doesn't really surprise us, like Sami Zayn re-signing. Would it be nice if they were to do a run in AEW? Sure, but it is what it is. Good on him for at least...
I gave up on that one the last time he re-signed, because I thought that's the time. He's still young enough. He still has enough potential. If he wants it, Triple H will make him world champion again. I think he's there. I think if he wants to be world champion, he can be. You know what I mean? So I think knowing that and knowing that even if he doesn't want it, Triple H might make him champion anyway, you know?
Yeah.
Because I have a feeling the fact that he was involved in the segment before, to pick him as the champion, if you will, over Seth, I feel like he was probably involved in that creative decision too, right? I mean.
Could be.
So, because Triple H was already involved in creative back then, right? So, you know, it's just like.
Another one, Giovanni Vinci was also released, so.
Interesting. I mean, he's pretty talented, so we could do something with him potentially. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He just got the shit under the stick in the Imperium fucking gimmick.
Yeah, no. He could be a goon. Hey, shit. Couple of balds together and fucking the tag team. You know what I mean? Fuck it. You know? Who cares?
Another contract we have before we get into the AEW ones. TNA talent Josh Alexander. His contract has expired this week. Again,
all right, this is a no-brainer to me, if I'm being honest, right? Like, get him. If he doesn't go to WWE, get him. You know what I mean? If he
doesn't go, it doesn't hurt to snag him. I would love to see Josh Alexander go to New Japan, though, if I'm being honest.
Oh, that would be sick. He could be their top guy, just straight up. You know what I mean? Like,
love him in New Japan. I think he'd fit like a glove. But, yeah, we'll update with Josh Alexander as time comes, but people do expect him to move on to either WWE, AEW, or New Japan. So... okay, we got some AEW stuff. First one's this. Bear Boulder was arrested and therefore released from the company. He was arrested for battery by strangulation, and the victim was identified as his fiance. So, yeah.
What the fuck?
What the fuck? Of course... all sympathy for this for the victim here. No one deserves to go through that. That is awful. Absolutely awful.
Yeah, I hope the justice system fucking throws this guy away. You know what I mean? Like, what the fuck, dude? You have... And I'll just say this, you know? Because this is something that pisses me off as a person that's stuck at the bottom here. What I'm saying is, I get really frustrated because of the amount of work that we put in. You know what I mean? Like, especially the amount that you put in, dude. Like, you're killing yourself for this show some weeks when you really... You know what I mean? Like, I just so you know, I appreciate that, Charlie. But, you know, like, so when I see people with opportunities like this, Charlie, who just piss them away because of some dumb shit, and I don't care what you sit here and try. Oh, you don't know what Boulder's life was like up to this point. You're right. I fucking don't. But I tell you what I would never fucking do, even if my life was as horrible as it could have possibly been. I would never cross this line, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm not talking about the line of violence against women. I'm talking about violence against fucking anybody who doesn't deserve it, you know? Anybody weaker than you. Anybody in general. Why would you throw all of your opportunity away because of some internalized bullshit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, but when you have opportunities, and I'm not saying that the fucking buried country ever had real opportunities, right? But they were probably getting paid way more than they deserved to be on a show, very little, to lose to people, essentially, and to look good out there, you know? Now, just to look like...
You have an opportunity. If you take advantage of your opportunity, you can do something with it.
Yeah, there's no... And this is going to sound really, like, cap to some people, but there is a reality where those guys took that Bear Country gimmick and won a world tag team title with it. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's not many realities, but there's one where they did it and everyone loved it. You know what I mean?
They on contracts because they've been in this company since we've started doing the show in 2021.
100%. That's why they're a meme on this show, because they've been around that long. That meme's dead now because this guy killed it. Unfortunately, I'm never going to say the fucking Bear Country joke again. You know? I feel really bad for it's Bronson, right? Yeah.
Bear Boulder, our guy that you're right. Bear Boulder's the one that did it. Bear Bronson. Right,
Bronson's the one that is having to respond to it and stuff. Okay, so Bronson, I feel really bad. Okay, so those of you that don't know, they're both called Bear. The only other thing that's different is their second name. And I'm pretty sure they probably misprinted this on articles too, because people don't know this fucking team. You know what I mean? Like, anyway, the point is, the one that didn't do it, I feel bad for, because he's probably fucked. I mean, he has not much going for him anyway. And now he has even less, because half the tag team was mostly the big guy. So, you know, like,
look, he's got charisma and you know, that can take you anywhere in this business. But it sounds like he was blindsided. He posted onto social media.
Well, you say that, but they've been having him team with a different team recently, so he couldn't have been completely blindsided.
You know, by the news.
Well, that I could see.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I guess my point is, like, I think they're tagging him with, like, maybe Vance and Cole Carter, maybe, or something like that in Ring of Honor, which that can work. I mean, you know, but I mean, like, it's a horrible situation all around is the only way I can really put it. You know what I mean? Like, and I feel bad for everyone involved except for the guy that did it, because fuck that guy, you know, like.
I mean, he's unbelievable. Big dude, man. That's pathetic.
Oh, I know, dude. You're a big fucking muscly fucking jacked ass fucking dude, and you fucking have to do that to somebody because you feel like you're a fucking big man or something. Like,
yeah, it's pathetic. That's what
I hope somebody. No, and I know this is a horrible thing to say, and I you know what? If there's consequences to me saying this on this podcast, I don't care. I hope somebody treats him that way in fucking prison because he deserves that much.
Yeah, it's pretty pathetic. But. That wasn't the only person gone from the roster this week. Of course, these are not under extreme circumstances like that. We had three people removed from the AEW roster today, which usually is the final verdict in AEW. They're very, very specific about that roster. Miro, he had been requested his release in September, did not wrestle. He didn't wrestle for an entire year. And he's gone. Again. If you guys have been following our show, you know what it is. If you don't want to work here, I don't really care. I'd let you go. And if you don't want to be in the company, then you're not meant for the company. It's that simple. The company's looking to grow, looking to hit new levels, bring this type of wrestling mainstream that they're trying to do.
But you know what's sad about that? Miro is the kind of wrestler that you use to do that. And for some reason, he just never got on board.
Nope, he never did. So this is one of the least surprising ones, and so are the other ones. So I'll hit all three for you, and then we'll get some. We had Malakai Black removed. No brainer. This has been coming. It was official. He's finally gone. Feels like we've been talking about this guy potentially being gone from AEW since we started our show. And then the last one, finally off the webs, off the roster, is Ricky Starks, who again. It's been.
I'll say it. That's the most embarrassing one in AEW's history. It is straight up. Cody, you can say, but Cody being an EVP and leaving, that's his own choice. You know what I mean? Like, this guy leaving is entirely the fault of the way they decided to go about things with CM Punk. And we cannot say that that's not the case. It 1,000,000% is. And
I wonder if we'll ever really find out why he got so. Where the relationship just
he straight up admitted at this point that part of why he's so upset is because of what everyone thought was going on with the CM Punk thing at the end. So unless he was just playing into rumors, which Ricky Starks is the kind of petty little shit to do, you know, like I think that's what happened. I think he was expecting to win a world title or at least the contention for one, you know, and they took it away from him. And I mean, I can understand being upset. But fucking taking your ball and going home is some Shawn Michaels shit. I'll just keep it a buck, you know? Like,
that's why this one doesn't affect me at all. It doesn't affect me in the slightest that he's gone. Maybe it's because he's been off TV for almost a year.
I think that's the case with all three of these guys, right? It's like, we haven't seen them in God knows how long, you know? everything we ever thought that you should do with them, they never did, except for Ricky winning the tag team titles, I guess. But that's not really something we were like, oh, they need to do this, you know?
Yeah.
They never did what they needed to do with any of these guys. So are we surprised that they're gone? No. Is it disappointing? Especially with cases like Ricky Starks, who we know, we've seen the potential of what he could do against MJF and various others, you know?
Yeah.
And but that's, we now get to watch him walk into probably not even NXT if they're smart, you know, and probably become one of the biggest stars in the company over there. And it's going to be sad, you know?
He could, but who knows? I just don't think it even compares to Cody still. I mean, we'd have to, someone like Swerve would have to leave the company for it to feel like Cody. Like, I just don't see it happening. I don't think we'll ever get that vibe again. Or like Hangman leaving the company. It'd need to be someone like that. And I just, Ricky Starks, it's on par with if we heard tomorrow, but it's hard to compare it because we've seen it coming. If we heard tomorrow Sammy Guevara was gone, it'd be like, damn, there was a lot of potential there. He got pushes. I liked him in the company. I liked what he did. I've absolutely loved what Ricky Starks has done in the company. It was one of our original pillars. And it went nowhere. And I'm sure in 10 years we'll hear about all of what really happened, brother. So I guess that being
said, wonder if Ricky makes our pillars still if we do that like a year later, you know? I wonder.
Yeah, I don't know. That being said, I'm going to hand the keys to you for AEW Dynamite this week.
Hundo P, let's get into it. All right, so just so everyone's clear, I may have to do another early dip before Collision, just because it's like 5:03 right now. So just letting everybody know, if I don't get through this quickly, I may not be around for Collision, but I will at least very much get through Dynamite. So, so we opened up the show, and Jay White's backstage talking with Renee Paquette. I think we got like a little recap of some trivia stuff here. I didn't write it down for some reason. I want to say there was like a little recap segment. Let me check the article really quickly. I want to say that's what happened, but you know, I could just be tweaking. Full tweak has been known to happen on this podcast before. I think it might have just been like a video package or something. I had, maybe there was, maybe I just invented that because it felt like that's what they do a lot of times. So either way, we'll move on. So we see Swerve and Ricochet arrive. They're, you know, showing up to the building. We also see Timeless Toni Storm. Which I guess this is the first time she's been on Dynamite since her quote unquote return a few weeks back. So that's pretty cool. You know?
I like these walking into the building things. It feels like a sporting thing, you know, when a broadcast starts, right? You'll see Luca walking into the building, right?
You know, I'll say too, that's something WWE does, and I feel like there's probably this fucking like inherent thing with AEW where they don't want to do that because they won't want to look visually different from WWE, right? But some of those things that WWE has appropriated over the years have been because it's very sports-like. So I feel like there is some of that stuff that you can just take. I feel like there should be a conversation in the wrestling community that there's no like visual style of WWE that you can't copy because it's just television shooting. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like WWE is doing something fucking innovative with their cameras that you can't copy. You know what I mean? Like, it's, you can just do it. And if people say, oh, you're copying the Fed, then they don't fucking understand how production works. You know what I mean? Like, it's straight up, like, you know, and I think that's true, unfortunately, of a lot of wrestling fans. Let's keep it a buck because, it's not their fault. Not everybody knows what it takes to make these shows. I think a lot of people just think that it's a lot of it is, I think it'd be shocking how little the in-ring product is the key to a wrestling show, too. Like how little percentage of the actual show it actually is in terms of making it work. You know what I mean? Like, because you could have two guys wrestle in a fucking, you know, a really great match for two people in a fucking armory and, you know, does nothing for you. But if you have cameras and a fucking really cool set and entrances and blah, 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 you know what I mean? Then maybe the vibe changes and the atmosphere is completely different. So, you know, I don't know. There's just something to be said about that, I think. But yeah, so like I said, Renee's backstage with Switchblade Jay White, asking him about, you know, how he's friends with, how'd you become friends with Cope, man? Like, that seems a little bit, like, wild out of nowhere. And he's like, well, you know, but the friendship that we're building up right now, you know, I mean, there's no history between them. And, you know, there's a little bit between him and FDR. So he's going to have to learn to trust them a little bit because of their, you know, long-term feud that him and the Guns have with them or whatever, you know. But either way, I think... I don't know. I really like that they acknowledge, again, Jay White's so fucking smart. He just acknowledges everything. And Jay White is actually kind of the perfect wrestler for an AEW like sort of company, because like he knows everything, man. He remembers everything. I don't care if he got that shit fed to him. Dude knows how to fucking deliver it in a way that I thought, oh man, Jay White, look at him just fucking layering stuff in there. Great, great fucking guy, you know?
Absolutely. We're back on, we got the good mic again.
Oh, nice.
Well, long story short, the fucking internet was being a shitter, so we were using the phone, but we are back.
Hell yeah. I like those nice dulcet tones coming through. All right. So basically he's like, yeah, I gotta have some new friends because the Death Riders are bitches, and right on cue as he says that, because I think the way he did this too was kind of nice. It was like, they always have the numbers, and as that happens he starts looking around like, oh shit, they're fucking here, you know. So he starts brawling with them. Nice little detail of Marina Shafir fucking grabbing the fucking goods and going with fucking Renee, you know, and that's pretty funny, you know. She grabbed her fucking
that, dude. That was so good. That was so good.
I guarantee Marina did not tell anybody she was going to do that either. You know what I mean? No. Like, there's no way.
And it's one of these examples you could tell from the fucking first note how enjoyable this was going to be as a show.
Oh yeah.
Like when this is our opening segment. I was like, okay, so we're in for something pretty fucking fun.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Yeah.
Yep. And then Rated FTR also walked up behind at the same time, you know, which I like, because Jay was like, great timing or perfect timing or something like that. Because they, you know, he set them up for a trap himself, you know what I mean? Which I thought was brilliant by Jay White. And Jay White is the kind of person that would know how to outsmart the Death Riders, because this is his whole fucking gimmick. You know what I mean? He knows this game. He ran this game for a decade in Japan. You know what I mean? Like, maybe not that long, but close. You know what I mean? And yeah, I mean, just great, great opening segment of the show. Love this stuff. Yeah. So, I mean, So they brawl all the way through into the arena. John Moxley then grabs the microphone, I believe, at some point. Cope grabs the microphone. It was a very chaotic brawl. That's why I kind of lost the sauce a little bit. Cope grabs the mic, says, let me see where if I can find the quote. Jesus Christ. Oh, wow, they just didn't put it in quotes. Thanks, guys. All right. So, yeah, he's asking for an answer for his challenge on Collision last week for a world title match, Revolution. Moxley makes a run toward the ring, says he deserves nothing. The answer is no. White took the mic, says he's got another offer, says, hey, why don't you breathe with the switchblade, choking in a pool of your own blood?
Yeah.
And White issues a challenge to an anything-goes Brisbane brawl match. Is it Brisbane or Brisbane? How do you pronounce it? Brisbane? Anyway, the Brisbane Brawl at Grand Slam. And so it's going to be White and Cope versus Moxley and Castagnoli, which is just another stupidly good match, tag team match on paper. We have two banger tag team matches on paper, you know what I mean? I feel are going to be less on this one, but the four wrestlers involved in both are just ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I expect really good, solidly good quality out of both. This is going to Australia, Charlie. I don't know if I had this going to Australia in my mind. I mean, I expected the Death Riders to be there in some capacity, but I wasn't sure what exact capacity we were going to get them in, you know what I mean? So obviously this is good stuff, a good start to the show. And we set up what they're calling the main event of Grand Slam. I don't know if I agree with that assessment, to be honest with you. I don't think this is going to main event the show. Maybe I'm wrong. I would think you have to put on Kenny last, right? Like,
I would think, but
they have done that before, man. It doesn't usually work out, so maybe they're gonna do it again, you know. Anyway, so we shout outs to Buddy Matthew versus Okada, shout outs, you know, a little video package here. I would say the video package is really more just like a little recap than anything, and then Okada. It did accept the match, so that match is going to be on Grand Slam, Okada versus Matthews for the AEW Continental Championship. Just thoughts on that match, Charlie? I mean, it's going to fucking slap, right? I mean, shit.
I am so unbelievably excited for that match. I can't fucking wait. Seriously.
And I did it on the head. This is a match of the year contender. Watch this one. Yes. It's going to be insane, you know?
I'm so happy for Buddy to get this moment in Australia, and I hope he fucking wins. Let's just do it.
Amazing and an awesome start for the new Hounds of Hell. I would love to see it. All right, so we had Will Ospreay taking on a unannounced opponent. And I'll say this about the match. It was a little short for my liking. I mean, for what this could have been, right? This could have been a fucking absolute drag out fucking murder fest, right? And so we'll probably get that eventually between these two, just not today. You know what I mean? It's okay. His mystery opponent ended up being the former tag team partner of his former friend, Mark Davis. And so this to me immediately signals a couple of things. The first thing it signals to me is obviously a potential reuniting of Aussie Open, you know what I mean? Which probably will happen in Australia, you would think. They may even come out to that theme, you know what I mean? Which just to get the pop, you know what I mean? That being said, I really enjoyed this. I mean, I like I said, it wasn't like the greatest match of all time, but I thought for what they did, they got there for me. I really liked the involvement of Don Callis on commentary here because, you know, again, Don can be annoying, but he also knows the exact right things to say during some of these segments. You know what I mean? So
yes, he does.
So I have to give him credit where it's due. Will is obviously Will, and you can never fucking hold a candle to Will unless you're like Kenny Omega, and then like the candle starts flickering because you both have so much power level anyway. But you know,
start aura farming.
Oh yeah, 100%. If fucking Kenny Omega is playing fucking Spider-Man on your fucking Marvel Rivals team, good luck. You know what I mean? But and if Will Ospreay's fucking Iron Man, it's over. But anyway, that being said, there was like an attempt to. How do we feel about everybody fucking using a fucking move of Ospreay's fucking offense to try and kill him?
Got to try and counter the top dog, man.
I guess, but I don't know. Does it diminish the move a little bit by everybody?
No,
having
because
a version
it doesn't
of it?
Work for them.
I guess
you have to. Look, you can hit
like Ricochet's winning matches with me.
No, but Ricochet created his own version of it.
Yeah.
And he was winning matches before that. It's like the one-winged angel. People can hit that move all they want. It doesn't work like Kenny's. So, good luck.
That's fair. I mean, hey, look, I've always been I'm not very old school wrestler about stuff, but like I will say that the one thing that I do agree with about the old school philosophy of wrestling is the amount of finishers that we hit nowadays can be a little ridiculous. You know, I do think a finishing move should finish the match sometimes. You know what I mean? Like just my opinion, you know,
and I love that everyone can have multiple finishers
and that I'm okay with too, but we just got to, you know, we got to stagger the usage of them so that they're not like, so they feel significant. So like if you see Will Ospreay getting the underhooks, you're like, oh fuck, he's about to finish this. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Hell yeah.
You know? But yeah, no, I mean, Ospreay obviously is incredibly talented. The big thing here, obviously, is post-match. Actually, let me go back to the end of the match here, because I do want to talk about what happened here. So, Ospreay, like, went for a hidden blade at one point. Davis then fired a lariat. Ospreay hit the no-sell on it. Jesus, my fucking lips are super dry. I'm going to have to drink some water after I get through this sentence here. But, yeah, he hits a massive pile driver. Davis ends up ripping off the middle turnbuckle. He tried to drive Ospreay into it. Rick Knox noticed it, stepped in. That distraction then allowed Ospreay to hit a charging hidden blade, got the win. Post-match, Ospreay grabs the mic, says it's like a party here in Atlanta. Callis is a party pooper, has a new best friend, and he'd like to bring him out so that Mr. Callis runs for the hills. Kenny Omega then comes out, his music hits. Callis hits the fucking digital dash. And he did. And yeah, I mean, so, you know, Omega then says, hey, I know this is supposed to be my victory for my friend here, but I have some things I want to say. You know, I will note there were some you sold out chants for Mark Davis, which I thought was pretty fun.
Yep.
But yeah, so anyway,
Mark Davis took a deal with the devil.
Oh, I also liked this. Again, another small detail I liked from the match. He was attacking the bad knee of Mark at one point, which I thought, that's fucking great, because it's almost like, and this is something that you could build out into an actual 1v1 storyline between these two eventually if you wanted to go that way. Because he just used the forbidden knowledge he'd gained from being on a tag team with him for years to fucking hurt him. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. That's something you could play with. I don't know if they will, but it's something you could. You know what I mean? It's certainly something Kyle could accuse him of if they become partners again. You know what I mean?
He was scouting you, bruv.
Bruv, we used to be brothers, and you went and you attacked his leg. He can't walk right now. You know what I mean? Like something like that. Obviously, I don't sound like Kyle Fletcher, but like some shit like that. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't write it on my notes. Anyway, basically, I'll look here. Tisk tisk. All right. So yeah, Omega said he's gonna wrestle again in 10 days with Ospreay and his return to AEW. I technically wrestled on TV, but whatever, Kenny. It's okay. You get hit in the head a lot. Anyway,
Nah, it didn't count.
It didn't count. You're right. It's okay. He gets hit in that a lot. All right. But yeah. So you know. Yeah. So Kyle and Kanosuke come out from the back, and they're like, ah, you fucking got words to say for us, fella? You think you're going to fucking fight us? Kyle says, no, not the time, boys. Omega says, hey, we can do this right now. But if not, hop on a jet, start training for Australia. It's been a long time since people could feel Omega, what Omega felt in 2019 to 2023, but now he's back, and everyone can feel that feeling once again. The match next week is going to show the future is with Kenny Omega and Ospreay, and then he gets to go home, sort of, you know, adieu and goodbye and good night and all that, you know. And then they hit the fucking goddamn greatest promo, or sorry, the greatest pyro of all time for fucking Kenny's gunshot.
that was brilliant.
I don't even think they told Kenny they were doing that. That was pretty fucking brilliant. You know, it's fucking Kenny's getting all the fucking the glory for coming back as a goddamn animal. But anyway, the reincarnation of Kenny Omega is complete. All right. But yeah, so we're going to recap video of the history between Swerve and Ricochet again. Again, I like how they told the story of this rivalry across this show. It really felt like it tied things together as we had to headed toward the main event. You know what I mean? All right.
Hurts it's been presented as a big deal.
Yes, and it should be. It's the biggest match on the show. I mean, it should be anyway, and it's on the show anyway. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I don't know, man. It's interesting. Yeah, so the Hurt Syndicate make their way down to the ring. West Side Guns turn at the ringside as he helped with their theme, I guess. So that's pretty cool. MVP said this is an official announcement from the Hurt Syndicate. Asked the crowd to stand for the standard of excellence, Shelton Benjamin, and the almighty Bobby Lashley, the new AEW World Tag Team Champions. MVP said he's going to keep it short. They have a plane to catch to make the Super Bowl party. He puts over Private Party, who are talented people, but in the wrong place at the wrong time. MVP yeah. then puts the locker room on notice. If you're an athlete champion, when they choose, you'll get. They're going to hurt you and take your title. And now they're open for business, and if you want an opportunity, they'll accept it. Now, at this point, Charlie, I was like, okay. Not that I'm going to change.
I thought they were aura farming.
Oh, yeah. I was like, all right, MVP, you're out here. You fucking, this whole thing's working. I'm down. And then, lights out, Charlie. Guns up. And fucking Christ, did these guys get a way bigger pop than I was ever going to expect them to get on their return, Charlie. The Gun Club are perma over at this point. And that's not to be unexpected. I mean, them and Jay White have really been
Bullet
really
Club
kind
gold,
of...
baby.
Oh, yeah. They've been one of the most over factions in AEW for a while, right? But to see them come back to this reaction, even without Jay and everything, and it's just, you know what I mean? And I don't expect them to interact with Jay much unless they just decide to just fully go back into it, which they might, you know, I wouldn't be against that. But, you know, if they want to keep them separate at least for a little bit, I wouldn't be against that either, just because the amount of reaction that they got here and the one that they could do on their own, they've proven they can do a tag team feud on their own without Jay, you know what I mean, in the past. So I am so excited for this story. And I don't know if it's going to be super long. It does look like we're going to get a title match next week, so it could just be a one-off. Because basically what happens here is they come out and they said, hey, you know, we're here to reclaim our glory. We want to come out. We don't mean any disrespect to you guys. We respect you guys for what you've done in this business, but we want our titles back. Yeah, basically, that's what they said. And MVP's like, hey, I respect it. You got a lot of moxie. You came out here. You stated your business like men. You know, you came into the ring when I asked you to and you stated your business. I respect your father. That's the only reason why you're not dead right now, you know, so you'll get your title shot. Now, you could take this two ways. You could take this as MVP genuinely respects Billy Gunn and wants to give them a title shot because he thinks, well, their dad's been a champion, you know, and they've been champions, so maybe this is a legit challenge for us. But I think the reality is MVP is looking at this as a stepping stone for his boys. You know what I mean? In his mind, this is a match that they win easily, right? So
it's former champions. It adds to the legitimacy of the reign.
Yep.
Yep.
100%. So in MVP's mind, this makes sense. And it makes sense that the Guns would try and take this opportunity because they've been off for a while. And we know that they should probably be back in title contention rather than back to the back of the line because of how many other teams really just aren't doing it for a lot of people right now, I think, in terms of getting to the titles, you know. So I think this is a great move. I'm really excited to see where they go with it. And shout outs to both teams. I think this is going to be really good stuff. And the big thing here, we got them finally embracing the term ass boys, Charlie, which is probably need to happen for a while, right? For being honest, it's been a part of their gimmick for a long time, you know, and just a nice little moment for the crowd so they can call them ass boys and not feel bad about it. Not that they ever did, you know. All right, Renee was getting goddamn worked to death tonight, Charlie. Holy shit. Renee backstage with fucking Mercedes this time. But she was not joined by actual Mercedes. It was Puppet Mercedes. Here we fucking go. All right. No, but
God,
yeah.
Harley Cameron's so good.
So fucking she's funny. She's talented. She's a really good singer. Again, I wish all the best for her. I wish she was in a different company sometimes because I feel like she would get used more. You know what I mean? Like, no offense, but like, there's part of me that like wishes like in a TNA, she could be a top women's division star straight up. They wouldn't let her do all this crazy shit, but they could definitely use her fucking comedy and fucking, you know, singing chops and stuff like that to do stuff. But anyway, yeah. So Harley Cameron says she's going to be live this in concert this Saturday on Collision. You know, I should say the puppet says that, but you know, then she slides into Cameron and says, wow, what a great idea. And she's like, I knew you weren't really that dumb after last week. And then the actual Mercedes Mome walks up and says, are you stupid or are you dumb, Harley? So yeah, basically she's still refusing to give her her shot because she hasn't pushed her far enough yet. We'll get there eventually on Collision, but, I don't know. I feel like this has been a nice little slow burn, you know, Mercedes absolutely refusing to give this title shot. And I think the amount they've hammered it home has really, I think when they initially announced this, I was like, okay, Harley's from Australia, so that's pretty cool, right? But I don't necessarily know if I want to see her in that spot, right? You know, I think over the last several weeks, not that I don't believe in Harley, it seems like a very big spot to give Harley, you know what I mean? Essentially a pay-per-view, not really, but essentially a pay-per-view against one of your top champions right now, right? So it's just a big swing, you know what I mean? So I wasn't sure. They've convinced me. I think this is going to be brilliant. I think Harley's going to really, really over-deliver in the match. And I think Mercedes is going to eat here. So that being said, Charlie, do you have any thoughts on this? I've kind of just been barreling through and not really asking your opinion on stuff. But yeah, I mean, do you have any thoughts on this segment and the potential for them facing each other at the non-pay-per-view, pay-per-view, sort of pay-per-view, kind of pay-per-view, not pay-per-view?
Yeah, I mean, it's really cool how they've made this push of what can be a really simple story of, oh, Harley Cameron wants to wrestle in Australia. You got your premise. Now, how do you deliver it, right? And they've done this by using the talent of Harley Cameron and the charisma of Mercedes.
Are you going to offend people if I say this is better than when fucking Paige did it?
No, it 100% is.
Sorry, Soraya, sorry.
No, it's a different approach in how they're doing it, too. Because, we mentioned in the Bandido match, how they earned that moment. In wrestling, you don't want to feel like, because everyone knows what wrestling is. We don't have to say it, but you want to feel like you earned that moment and you got to write a compelling story, whether it's in ring, whether it's on the mic or both. And we jump from an in-ring promo to a backstage, which again, I like using of the different variants, open up the arena a bit, if you will. And Harley here, she's selling the story of playing the comedy act. But also the talent is there. You can hear it in the singing. And she's a legit ventriloquist, which what can this woman not do, for fuck's sake?
I don't know, but I'd like to find out, brother.
I know. It's insane. And like, good on her, because she's crushing this and she's working with an S-tier fucking wrestler who's, no matter what, we know the match is going to be good.
Nah, Harley Cameron is the definition of a carny fucking wrestler, man. And I fucking love that we still have them out there, you know? There's still a few. There's still some in the business. You still see one every now and then, you know? I'm trying to think of another example. Penelope Ford's kind of like that, right?
It's like why we mentioned earlier, charisma goes a long way in this business.
Oh, dude. And she has it in Harley fucking Cameron, spades.
And more than anyone right now, her charisma is taking her to a new level. So, good for her. I'm rooting for her. I can't wait to see the highs of this thing.
I wish I had the like a percentage of the confidence that she has to go out there and do this stuff, because like, first of all, let's just talk about the concept of ventriloquism. It's super antiquated, right? It's not something that people really do anymore. You know what I mean? I mean, people do, but it's not something that you're going to go out of your way to fucking go see a show for, unless you're like, you know, like just looking for entertainment for your kids or something. Right. You know? So like, it's a skill that not a lot of people have, and she makes it like entertaining in a way that is like useful in a wrestling program. I mean, It's like it's she's taking stuff that nobody else could do anything with and making it her own, and that is indicative of you're capable of anything. You know what I mean? So I just hope that Tony Khan is internalizing all this stuff and it like comes back to his brain later.
Oh, he knows what he has in Harley Cameron, and Harley Cameron knows how good she is because they've tried.
How funny is that too? Because I'd never fucking heard of her before he brought her in. You know what I mean? Which is crazy.
Her first wrestling match ever was in February 2022.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, he just he must have his ear to the ground with certain people in the company, you know what I mean? Like, and he's just like, and I wouldn't be surprised if Tony Khan still is on every fucking message board in the world. Maybe not messaging anymore because he's a little too busy, right? But just looking at what people are talking about.
She was really good friends with people in wrestling, and it inspired her to do wrestling. And I believe at the time her boyfriend was a wrestler.
Okay.
And it's one of those things where one thing comes to another, and, you know, now we have someone here who's got unlimited potential. I mean, she really can be the world champion.
Oh, yeah.
And by the time she gets there, everyone's going to be loving her and rooting for her. Because, like, we'll get into on Collision. I mean, oh, my God, they have the crowd in the palm of their hands.
100%. All right. I'm going to try and speed run here, boys, because we're running out of time. All right. So Renee backstage with Hangman and Page. Ask him why he was looking for Swerve Strickland last week.
He went into the Swerve's locker room. And it was like, oh, shit moment.
Oh, okay. I fucking
how do you feel about them here? Because the main story of this was them kind of addressing, did you think about going babyface for a second? That was kind of the main, how did you feel about them addressing
that
head on?
Okay, so
that
is something that, yeah, so like, I mean, okay, so here's a real conversation we can have. Pro wrestling should be able to acknowledge the concept of good guys and bad guys.
Yes.
I don't know if we should be using the terms heels and faces necessarily. I don't know if that really – I think that's just a little too inside baseball for people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
– I don't know if they did here, but she basically
I don't think
like,
they did. I'm saying – just to give people an idea of where my brain is at, like for how far you could go with this. What I'm getting at is the idea that we can acknowledge that there are good guys and bad guys. It shouldn't be a problem, right? You know what I mean? That being said, was this a little too on the nose this soon after?
I wouldn't have brought it up.
Yeah, I think it works better as a slower burn, right? You know what I mean? So maybe they had to sit on this for a little while now because they might have fucking fumbled.
No, but here's the thing. I understand them because Renee, she's in the weeds, if you will. She's asking the hard-hitting questions. And everyone caught, you know, as they dubbed it, I believe they called it a moment of weakness. That and I understand Renee bringing it up. But I don't know if it's something I would have touched on. Because, again, I don't know. We know where this is going. It's going to be a Hangman babyface turn eventually, and it's going to be fucking huge. It might be in a year from now.
I'm with you, though, because I think I kind of would have preferred us watching Hangman come to this realization himself. I don't need anyone to tell him what he's feeling. You know what I mean? Like,
This is different because they would have not – they wouldn't have done this a few years ago. This almost felt like baby steps. Like, here, guys, here's what we're doing. Come on in. Come join the fun, which – that hasn't been the way the story has gone because we've seen moments of weakness before. They haven't been as obvious in his heel turn, but there has been moments of weakness. If for every single thing other than Swerve, which has been the why that worked so well. But yeah, I don't know. It felt like just kind of coddling a little bit. And I totally can acknowledge maybe I'm overthinking this, but I wouldn't have done it. But he covers his ass right away 2 seconds later with Max. So.
100%, like literally. I mean, and that's the thing, like that's why I kind of like I'm a little surprised that they decided to even mention it, because if he's just going to continue, not that I'm saying that he should have fucking flipped babyface right here,
no.
I think that would have been really stupid, obviously, but you know, like if we had gotten some kind of acknowledgement here, it would have felt weird, you know what I mean? Like, so they did the right thing. I don't know, we'll come back to this.
And to be fair to Hangman, he did like kind of threateningly deny it.
Yes, which is why he should absolutely react.
So
he
shouldn't be waiting. I just
because let's be real, I'll fucking go as deep as I've never gone on this before. But let's keep it a buck. What is Hangman's character essentially portraying right now? Is his fucking he got his fucking balls hurt? You know what I mean? His fucking pussy hurt, right? And he decided to go hyper masculine. He went the exact opposite of what he is, right? He went into the toxic masculinity Hangman. You know what I mean? That's what he's portraying right now. Essentially,
he's not the Hangman we see on Blue Sky posting his garden.
Correct. He's not the metrosexual fucking cowboy that we're used to. You know what I mean? Like, it's just the truth. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
the cowboy you could see down at Forever 21. No, anyway. Anyway, you know.
It just felt like us worthy of us following up on this from the conversation we had a couple weeks back.
Oh, 100%. Because this is like, you know, I don't think it's bad. It's interesting. So, yeah, we have Masscaster who comes up and he's like, hey, man, I want my time on the camera. And he's like,
Max is fucked.
Yeah, he's going to get murdered and it's going to be fun to watch. he's going to literally take out two guys named Max in like a couple of weeks. It's going to be fun. Anyway. Yeah, so that should be fun. So Masscaster gets chased down by him a little bit. You know, fun stuff. You know what I mean? I did like I'll give Caster credit. He's getting a little bit better with the heel work here because he's like, hey, man, can you like put, you know, maybe Anthony Bowen or Billy Gunn in the hospital?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I should put somebody in the hospital. How can I put you in the hospital, Max?
It was good. It was fucking great.
God damn it, Eggman. All right. Let me see. What do I have to still talk about here? We had the AEW International Champion, Kenosuke Takeshita, and Kyle Fletcher took on the Hounds of Hell. And my God, what a fucking match. Fuck, man, I don't have time to talk about this match. It was so goddamn good. This is like AEW tag team match at its best. You know what I mean? And these are four of the best wrestlers in the world. I mean, what do you fucking expect, man? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't know, man. Like, there's just so many fucking crazy spots in this match. I mean, let me just... you know what? A good way to fucking get through this quickly is just to look at what I noted about. Because there was a lot of stuff in here. Yeah, you know what it was? And this is something that I actually think that I'm glad that I fucking went into my notes for because I wrote this down specifically. I feel like the Dynamite flavor of wrestling this year is very Japanese-British strong style influenced.
I can see that.
And just the match had a lot of fantastic, really like really close near falls counters. The crowd was really rocking with it. Okada's music got hit at one point. You know, there was some really like there was this DDT that Brody kicked out of at one point. That just the fucking reaction from the crowd when he kicked out of it was the most fucking insane thing I've heard in a while. You know, just really good stuff. I mean, I could probably talk for 30 minutes on that match. Unfortunately, I don't have the time today, or I would, you know what I mean? But
yeah, I'll save all my thoughts for after. Just go ahead and hit all your home runs here for the end of the show that you'll need to hit.
100%. Hook and Joe, they beat up the fucking goons of Christian Cage mercilessly. So there's that, you know? Okay, MJF came out with some harsh words for Double J. This is where we got the payoff to Max being chased down by, Adam Page. Adam Page stared down MJF again, so that looks like that's going to be his next stop after he's done with Max.
Revolution, which, baby.
Yep, that should be a feud of the year. Yeah, I'll just say it. It'll probably be feud of the year. You know what I mean? If they do
like a 3 to 4 month program with those two,
yep.
Yeah, forget about it. Yeah, you're going to have some of the craziest shit you've ever seen.
The fucking, and I hope that's their next dog collar match, if that's what we do. You know what I mean? I would love that. Because we haven't had one since CM Punk, right? So, since The Butcher. I liked Dustin Rhodes. So, okay, actually, before I move on, Dustin Rhodes, I mean, the match will be fine, I'm sure. But, I mean, like, did it do anything for you, him and Max?
No, I thought it was fucking brilliant.
I thought so, too.
Yeah.
He's sick of Max's bullshit, you know?
Yep.
Called him boy. Boy! I know that popped you.
Arr!
Max got very personal about his dad and Cody. I like that. He brought up the roller coaster. You know, and it's funny, too, because everyone knows this. He's one of the only people that can't actually bring up Cody because they're boys, you know what I mean? Or at least they were, you know what I mean? It should be a really good program. I mean, that could actually, again, like, it's funny. Like, I do expect Max and fucking, I guess both Maxes to feud with their current, you know, guys that are chasing them down right now, if you will, for at least a few weeks. So we may not get straight into the Revolution. So it might be a slight. That's why I'm thinking the Revolution will be the first match, and then it'll probably like something will happen at the end of that match. Like Hangman will lose his shit or something, and it'll continue. You know what I mean? So, Tony Storm arrived as Mariah May and faced Queen Aminata. Really good match. Tony Storm is becoming Shang Tsung at this point. She can just adopt anybody's fucking gimmick and just become them. She's got the fucking pagan magic mastered. Seeing her in this gear kind of made me appreciate her build a little bit more because like she like obviously you know you don't I don't know if you necessarily appreciate how contoured a person's wrestling gear really is to their build, you know what I mean? Like when she was in Mariah's gear here, she still looked good, but you could tell that it was made for Mariah, you know what I mean? Like it's designed to look different, you know, it's for a different body, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. When you make wrestling gear, you don't think about that, but you know, so some things that you don't appreciate, and she still managed to make it look fine. Mariah made a joke about tits. I mean, no surprise there. Commentary was just kind of fucking all over the place during this one. So, and then after the match, we got an in-ring promo from Tony Storm. Good stuff. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Dustin was backstage and he says he's going to beat MJF's bitch ass, basically. So that should be fun. We got a really great fucking cool music added video package from fucking Hobbs and Large Williams fucking battle. So that was fucking great. And then that carried straight into a New York Minute from the ALT. Appreciators of the Learning Tree, I guess. Anyway, and then we got the call out for the Bandido 100K bounty here. And then Hobbs comes out because as soon as Large William takes the mic, he's like, now Hobbs. And then as soon as that happens, bah, 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 it's like, oh shit. And he attacks the Outriders also. We're not far behind him. We had a little choke slam competition for some security guards getting thrown around here. Man, these Hobbs and Brawls, Bill Brawls just fucking hit, man. I don't know why. The two of them fighting just fucking hits. I don't know what it is. And then our main event, which, I mean, shit. I really wish I could give this the time of day that it deserves, man. I really fucking wish I could because this match was so fucking good, Charlie. Oh,
yes,
my
it was.
God. It had fucking like 4 or 5 weeks of buildup. It had so much going into it. This is probably, and no offense to the Hangman thing, because it's going to go down as one of the greatest things in AEW history, obviously, but I think that Swerve has managed to find ways to go to other levels since then, including this one, that I didn't think were possible given the level that he was at when he was on the way up to the championship, you know? Like, I find it very difficult to not see Swerve with the championship again by the end of this year with the run that he's currently on, Charlie, you know?
It's more proof of how great Swerve is.
Oh my god,
and what
I think I just realized what they're
going to
do at the middle of the year. 3-4 months from now, if this is still not going on, because God only knows, they could fucking have these guys wrestle all year and it probably would fucking work, you know? But when MJF is done with Page, and if, say, Adam Page is going on to fight for the world title, is that when we finally have our confrontation between Max and fucking Swerve? Is that it? Is that the time?
Please.
Oh my god, we could be in for a fucking hell of a year this year, buddy, let me tell you. Because I'm mad. We need to have Max versus Swerve, like, for real. You know what I mean? Like, for real, you know? Like, just a really great fucking insane bumping. Oh my god, the bump that fucking Ricochet took on the barricade, bro. Check bro's back. Is he okay? God damn, you know what I mean? Fucking German suplex on the apron, and the only thing I can describe it as, it's shambolic. That's all I can describe it. It's what it did. Just so much energy from the crowd. And deep in overtime, too. I mean, the crowd was just losing it, you know? Like, I just fucking, oh, dude, I don't even know what to say. Ultimately, Swerve gets tapped in the fucking balls with, like, the fucking karate, the double karate chop or whatever the fuck you want to call it. And fucking, then he gets hit with a spirit gun. That rat bastard Ricochet cheated again. So we're not done here, clearly. Swerve is going to be unbelievably pissed at this result. I imagine we're heading to a death match of some kind, Charlie, right? That's what I have to think, right?
God, I hope so.
A flying death match. Yes. All right. So that being said, I guess that'll fucking do it for me this week. I fucking really wish I could stick around the talk. I haven't talked Collision in, like, I feel like a month, dude.
It's all right. We'll get it back on for next week, because next week we're gonna have a fun time. We're going to have a fun show. Oh, yeah. This is our only podcast this week. We are doing the New Japan, so yeah. Thank you for your time, Duke. Yep. That was good. I guess I'm going to give a couple of my thoughts on the end of Dynamite here, just later, like you. Everyone. Later. And then we'll dive into Collision, everyone. So we're not going to backtrack crazy far, but Kenosuke Takeshita and Kyle Fletcher defeating the Hounds of Hell. That was such an enjoyable match, and it kind of proved everything we thought about with this tag team. A, the tag team of Buddy and Brody and how great their chemistry already is. And B, Takeshita and Kyle. I mean, these are, you're dropping two single stars at this point into a tag, and they've been tag partners for many times, and they just know how to make it work. So I really like that. Again, apologies for the show this week and last week. Just with, Duke was sick last week, and we took care of that with what we did. And then this week, you know, we just, unfortunately, timing has just not been on our side. And I partially think you know, our plan was to do it last night, but, you know, Super Bowl and all this and that. And then today we go to record and my internet shits out the instant we go to sit down to record. So it's just unfortunate, but I do apologize for that. We'll be back on track next week. So if you have stuck with us, thank you very much. I thought MJF and Dustin Rhodes here, this was really, really special. And I know you can have the take of, oh, we're going back to the old farts. And I've been guilty of saying that before, too. But there's something different with Dustin Rhodes. He is an AEW original, just like Christopher Daniels was. Dustin Rhodes is not going to beat MJF in the middle of the ring. That's not going to happen. But you can use Dustin Rhodes. You can use his legitimacy. You can use his legacy. And you can have a really, really good program with MJF, whether it's short or long. You know, MJF here with Dustin, I felt the passion. I mean, God, this felt like something Dustin's been trying to get off his chest for years at this little shit. And I really, really thought it worked. I gotta tell you, in terms of a one in-ring promo, this sold me on the match. So do with that what you will. I'm curious if everyone's kind of vibing the same there. We had Mariah May join commentary for the Timeless Toni Storm vs. Queen Aminata match. And I wanted to talk about this because playing the role of Mariah May is Timeless Toni Storm. Dude, are you kidding me? Like, how much fun is this shit? It's such an enjoyable gimmick. It takes us all over the place to all these different levels. And now we've gone full circle of her cosplaying as Mariah and Mariah's reactions. She's shook. Mariah does a great job playing this up too. And Queen Aminata, she tries to like start embracing a little Tonyisms in the match. And I thought that was really good. Together, they just had such great chemistry in terms of what the match was. This was more of a comedy match wrapped in this but within that, we had hard-hitting Queen Aminata. We had hard-hitting Toni Storm. And they really made it work. I thought the hair extensions getting flown out all the ring from Toni Storm were fucking hilarious. And yeah, like Duke had mentioned, when you see someone else in completely night and day gear, it looks so different. Like, I think a lot of people were like, holy shit, she really feels like Mariah May. And that's those mannerisms. That's this, that, and the other. And obviously, like, the extension she put on. And she just knew how to play it up. And really good. Mayday for the victory. Just overall, an enjoyable match. And I'm really, really looking forward to their match this upcoming weekend. So, the last thing we'll touch on is Ricochet defeating Swerve Strickland. I don't want to, you know, sometimes you got to tout your own things. And I was really, really passionate on this podcast when the rumors of AEW signing Ricochet were happening. And I said, just you wait. Because there's a lot of wrestling fans that never saw Ricochet before he went to WWE. And I said so many times, so passionately, just you wait. Because this guy, he is that good. There's a reason he's Mr. Two-time Bullet Champion. There's a reason. Because it's Ricochet. He can back it up in the ring like anybody. And you know what they've done? What's the one thing that didn't happen to him when he was in WWE? And I was a very passionate Ricochet fan. I got his first shirt in NXT. I literally went to every NXT taping for a solid 2 years, 2-3 years in a row. Like, it was a monthly thing. It was fucking so cheap and was right down the street. And I would go every single opportunity I had the opportunity to. So, opportunity, blah, 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 blah. Fuck you. No, but I was such a fan of Ricochet before that because he was the guy that got me into PWG, which was my first taste of independent wrestling, which then led me to the Young Bucks. Which then led me to New Japan and the love that I came in with New Japan Pro Wrestling and what that is and why I love that company so much. So I had to mention that because you know what? It's been almost, 6 months now? I am so happy for him because now he has this character. The one thing he hasn't had is he's got a character. It's night and day different. He's cutting good promos. It's like when James Gunn is directing. I'm just throwing this out there. It's like when James Gunn is directing Batista or John Cena, and he knows how to get the best out of him because he's a great director. What they've done now with Ricochet is they're playing into his positives. They know what he's great at, right? They've tried little things here. Sometimes his quick-witted mic stuff, it wasn't hitting as hard. So they backed it up a little bit, and they've started doing these kind of comedy gimmicks, these sit-down gimmicks, and they said, fuck it, we're going to turn you into a fucking disgusting heel. And guess what? It works. And they've now played to its strengths. He has a good character. He took some insane bumps in this match. He got a low blow, spirit gun, pinned Swerve Strickland. Absolutely phenomenal. I love this. I absolutely love this. Well, let's get into Collision this week. So, funny enough, we've already spent some time talking about Collision because of how great it was. And it started, it was from the get-go, guys. It really was. If this was one of the weeks where you missed Collision and maybe you're just kind of going through podcasts to maybe get you caught up, I hope I do you justice. And I would recommend highly, whether you have your Max or whatever you use to watch AEW, it could be YouTube. I would really recommend this show. So we get our promos from Mark Briscoe and Kyle Fletcher. Pretty solid stuff. And then we open up. We're in Houston, Texas. Shout out Texas, because holy shit, you guys are so good for AEW. There was a security guard flung across the screen by Marina. John Moxley was behind her. And the show is going to begin when I say it does. So he was tired of Cope. How can you demand a world title shot? I call the shots. He's got 1,000 reasons to deny Cope a title shot, but the major one is he didn't like that son of a bitch. He wouldn't give him a title shot. He'd fight him whenever he wanted. He told him to bring his friend Jay White and his half-broken neck to Australia and pray that Moxley gave him a grace to walk out. And you knew you were in for something good when the crowd gave you the heat that they did. Because what has been the one thing truly missing from Moxley in this world title run is heat. We lost all our heat. It started with so much fucking anger and hatred. And they were getting massive reactions. And post-Orange Cassidy, it gets quiet. Like embarrassingly quiet sometimes. And it's heartbreaking. And it's what's been so frustrating about this title program. But here we are. The crowd reacted. Now, is this a coincidence? Are we going to get the same reactions the following week? I hope so. We open up our wrestling with a trios three-way match. The Undisputed Kingdom, Adam, Kyle, and Roddy, defeating Shane Taylor Promotions, Shane Taylor, Carly Bravo, and Sean Dean, and then TNT champion Daniel Garcia, Angelo Parker, and Matt Menard. Okay. This was fucking awesome. And that's going to be the trend for this show. Sorry, not sorry. You have our trios division being just unleashed yet again. And Shane Taylor Promotions is bringing out the best of the infantry. Guys that we want to root for. Guys that we enjoy their chemistry in general. Right? And Shane Taylor's one of those guys who brings out the best in anyone that he's with. He started off really good here, and it was Roddy and Shane kicking us off the match, and I was immediately in, and all the shenanigans that you would want were afoot, and people were beating the shit out of each other, and Houston was just going fucking nuts. Shane at one point got taken out on the floor by the total elimination move, and then Adam Cole hit the victory with the boom on Carly. So really good to see the Undisputed Kingdom pick up a victory. I'm liking this for Adam Cole. I think this is working really well for them as a trio because, look, as much as the next guy, I absolutely loved Undisputed Era. And, you know, I was really into Undisputed Elite. And if you were here, if you've been on our show since we've been doing them, at least the AEW, it's, you know how much I love these guys. So I'm really, really liking this. Post-match, Death Riders came in. Oh my God. No way. Oh my. Our trios titles are here. Holy sh. When was the last time? I wonder if anyone felt the same. I was like, yes, yes. Claudio Pack and Yuta came out with the titles and started beating the crap out of people. But Kingdom at one point fought back. O'Reilly even tapped out Yuta with an ankle lock. They fled. Confirmed the match for next week. Awesome stuff. Video package for FTR. They've taken a backseat for too long, and they're coming for the World Tag Team titles for a third time. I don't know about you guys, but Hurt Syndicate vs. FTR does get my my tinglies tingling. So, yeah, buddy. Yeah. Look, can never go wrong with FTR. And that's just kind of how I feel. It's how I've always felt. They're going to do what they got to do. And Hurt Syndicate feel like a big, big deal. And, you know, that's one of those things, too. Bobby and Shelton were brought in. And what they've been given as they've been brought in has just been awesome. You know, I really feel like, and I meant this during our awards show, 2024 was my favorite year of AEW. All the routes that they went, the Danielson title reign, it doesn't, like, all of it, I thought it was so, so good. But the one caveat I always said was I was disappointed in the tag division that year. I was disappointed in it because I love tag team wrestling. I love it. It might be my favorite. And I absolutely just adore it. And FTR versus Hurt Syndicate, if we do this, and I mean really do this, the potential is limitless. It really is. So, yeah. Max Caster was backstage with Alicia Tout. She asked about Hangman Page. He said how he acted in Dynamite wasn't very manly. And if he wanted a fight, he should accept his open challenge when it returns on Dynamite. Max, you're going to get your ass whooped, young man. Keep doing your thing. We had our bounty match that we talked about, guys. I seriously, that high noon spot, I literally stood up giggling, okay? I was drinking my iced coffee. I started hitting the fucking robot, okay? Seriously. Who's going to be the next luchador that's a world champion in a major company? With how Bandito was just presented, and I don't want to spoil it, but with how someone else was just presented, come on. It's time. And 2025 might just be the year. I got to tell you, I would love for AEW to be the ones to do it. I would fucking love it. And I'm so excited about the potential of Bandito being back on this return. Excuse me. Powerhouse Hobbs is backstage with Lexi Nair. He told Big Bill that his boy wasn't able to collect his bounty. He'd be at Texas next week for a fight. Let's go. Let's go. Looking forward to it. And then just like back-to-back segments here. La Facción Ingobernable, Rush, Tralístico, and the Beast Mortos make this entrance where they're presented like gods. How fucking cool did Rush look? I mean, in the age of TikTok and everything fucking being about aura, I mean, dude, Rush was aura farming. Seriously, how fucking cool can one man look? They beat the unholy fuck out of these people. The bull's horns, you name it. They're beating down the locals. Commander makes the save. He takes down Mortos with a springboard poison rana. The numbers are too much. They go to unmask him. Look to the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's the Electrical Man. It's Hologram, baby. He returns with his new powers. And if his powers are that the lights always stay blue, count me the fuck in. Count me in, man. That was cool. He gets a massive pop. Beating the crap out of these people. They're rolling to the back. Welcome back, Hologram. Welcome back. Ah, I love all of our luchadors in AEW. I seriously do. This is, it's just, I was giddy, man. Like, I'm not kidding you. That vibe that I had, it kept going throughout the entirety of the show. Rush is threatening a referee with a chair. The refs are trying to hold him back. He shoved him away. And he cracks one of them. I apologize. I don't know the referee's names off the top of my head, but he cracks this old man with a fucking, with that forearm. And you just see this poor bastard in the front row. Like, he's like, oh my God. Oh my God. It was awesome. Lexi Nair tries to interview Megan Bain. She walks away. Thunder Rosa turned the corner. She tried to welcome her to AEW, but she walks away. She's like, why is everyone always in a bad mood? Come on, she just got here. I thought that was a nice little touch. Harley Cameron, live in concert. You want to talk about a segment that could just be the drizzling shits, if not done right? Oh my God, this could have been so cringy you can't watch the screen. But Harley Cameron, she's just so good. She's got the puppet Mercedes on her back, in her bag. She starts singing how she wanted to ride the money train. Mercedes came out, asked if she was stupid or dumb. Calls her a loser again. Cameron cut her off to sing another song about Mercedes money. Feel the wrath. The crowd starts chanting, feel the wrath. Mercedes cuts her off, calls her a loser, tells her to leave the ring. The crowd's chanting for Harley. Said that she wanted to be where she was and wouldn't stop until she got a title shot in her hometown. The most entertaining thing Mercedes has ever been was when she was a puppet. She slaps her for it. Bonked her with the mic, sends her to the floor, accepts her challenge, promised to embarrass her in her hometown. Dude, I mean seriously. Who on their bingo card, when you first were introduced to Harley Cameron and QTV, thought we'd be here? And she is like the most charismatic person you've seen. And it's not that she was presented badly in QTV. It's just like, oh, who's this? Oh, this is cool. I like what they're doing here. You know, I like having a character like this brought into your program. It's kind of a fun little gimmick, if you will. Then she starts introducing more about herself, and that book starts opening. The layers of the onion start expanding, right? So good. So good. I gotta tell you, being the number one Mercedes fan that I am, I might be rooting for Harley Cameron in this because she's fucking won me over so much. Buddy backstage with Lexi Nair. They're scheduled for a sit-down interview. Okada hasn't arrived yet. He bursts in late, asks for water. Matthew says, fuck you, buddy. Let's cut to the chase. I'm not falling for this comedy shtick. I know what you're capable of. Didn't think you knew what I'm capable of, though, buddy. Okada calls him a bitch. Matthews goes to take a swing to make Okada jump. He left. Okada threw his water down in anger. He kind of baited him. Come on, man. I think this match is going to really surprise a lot of people that don't know how great Buddy Matthews is. Dustin Rhodes picked up a quick victory. Takes the mic. Says MJF isn't a devil. He looked the devil in the eyes, knocked his teeth out, and dragged his way out of hell. He would make sure MJF met the devil on Dynamite. Death Riders in the back have been Trios champions and forever at this rate. They credit Undisputed Kingdom for stepping up. He gave them credit for having teeth, promised to pull them all out. Yuta's left by himself. He did a little smirk and everyone booed him. Great job. It was fun. I think the match is going to kick ass. Thunder Rosa, with Toro the Mascot, took on and defeated Penelope Ford. Pretty quick match here. She beat the crap out of her. They were There were some people theorizing that maybe she was stalling at one point because people Ford might have gotten dinged up during the match. I hope that wasn't the case. I haven't heard anything about it. Almost, you know, going on like 40 hours later, haven't heard anything about it. So I hope that wasn't the case. But yeah, post match, Megan Bain came out, goes face to face with Rosa, jumped her, and laid her out with an F5. I'm excited for Megan Bain in AEW. I don't know if they've dropped Camille. I have no idea what happened with that. She was sporting that cast following the Mercedes thing, but we never even got a payoff to the Mercedes thing, so I have no idea. That being said, Megan Bain, Thunder Rosa, it's a great, great first feud for her. Got footage of Ricochet beating up Swerve, going to Defy to gloat in front of his hometown. Strickland made a surprise appearance, attacked Ricochet. Cool, cool, cool. Houston rapper Bun B was backstage with Lexi Nair promoting his Trill Burgers. Ricochet enters the frame, tries a burger, spits it out. So thanks, Prince Nana, for the embassy robe he stole after Dynamite. That son of a bitch! Mariah May takes on and defeats Shay Carmichael in a quick squash match. She's got a big bag that she came out with. Beat the crap out of this woman. Luther, the butler, came out with a tray revealing the bloody shoe Mariah used all those months ago. May took the shoe, went to attack Carmichael. Tony Storm in her place attacked Mariah. Storm went to pile drive Mariah on the ring steps. She escaped through the crowd. I love this shit. And then we had our main event match, and Fletcher, man. What a great week for him. So, yeah, that's it for this week of wrestling. Just to preview for next week, because we have Grand Slam that we need to talk. Well, I'll do some predictions for, and Dynamite. So, Dynamite is being taped. Yeah, it's being taped on Tuesday. We have the Hurt Syndicate facing off against the Guns. I got the Hurt Syndicate retaining here. The Death Riders taking on the Undisputed Kingdom. I got another retention here, but looking forward to these matches a lot, guys. MJF versus Dustin Rhodes, fuck yes, and Max Caster's Best Wrestler Alive open challenge. I would fully expect Hangman Page to accept that, open to surprises. And this looks like the final lineup for Collision. Well, they're just saying AEW Grand Slam Australia. Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay versus Konosuke Takeshita and Kyle Fletcher. I got Ospreay and Omega winning that. Continental Champion Kazuchika Okada defends against Buddy Matthews. I have Okada retaining. AEW Women's World Champion Mariah May versus Toni Storm. I have another retention with Mariah May. TBS Champion Mercedes Moné defends against Harley Cameron. I gotta tell you guys, they say don't miss the moment. I think Harley Cameron's winning this. Now, Mercedes holds four fucking belts. There might be politics involved with those four belts where they don't want this to happen. That, because it's, I believe, three different companies. So do you have to factor in those companies? I have no idea. That part of wrestling, I don't know about, but it exists. It might not matter at all because AEW seemingly is the one on national television. So I don't know. Keep an eye out for that. Jay White and Cope versus John Moxley and Claudio in a Brisbane brawl. I have Jay White and Cope winning that. And then the Learning Tree will be in action. So, out of all of our title matches, I do think one will switch. My gut is telling me Harley versus Mercedes, and because I do believe we'll eventually, I don't know how we get there, but I think we get to Mercedes versus Athena at All In. I think they teased it last year. I'm curious if that story is going to be going in full. But look, I love all these champions. I love Okada. Mariah and Mercedes have been such great women's champions. And we have our new tag champions. And I would love to see the trios change, but just being honest, guys, if you follow the show for a while, it's a taped Dynamite. I just don't see it happening. That's just me being skeptic. So apologize for that. But yeah, that's it for me today, though, guys. I hope you really enjoyed this show. We will be back tomorrow. Shit, by the time you're listening to this episode, it might already be out. We're reviewing New Beginning in Osaka. You know, I could probably fucking look at that card again, because I'm pretty excited for this. I really am. Um, it looks pretty loaded up. We have Tanahashi versus Togi Makabe. We have Shingo Takagi versus Drilla Maloney. Guys, Drilla Maloney is a fucking heavyweight now. Let's go. Shota Umino versus Great Okan. Shota going to get back on track? I'd love to see it. Taichi versus Sonata. I always love Taichi, especially on pay-per-view. Rocky Romero and Yo versus Kosei Fujita and Robbie Eagles. Bolton Oleg versus Konosuke Takeshita. Takahashi and Naito versus the Young Bucks. Yoda Tsuji versus Gabe Kidd. And Hirooki Goto versus Zack Sabre Jr. This card, I mean, I want to root for New Japan so much. And when I see a card like this, it makes me so happy. So, I can't wait to watch that. I mean, shit, I'm probably not even going to bed before that show comes out. I'm so excited. So, yeah, that being said, thank you very much. If you're interested in our coverage of the Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man ESE Fantasy, the link is in the bio. You're more than welcome to check that out. And yeah, I'm going to be reviewing Captain America this week. So I can't wait to see that. That being said, everyone, catch y'all on the flip side.